Good evening and welcome back to Ulcerative Colitis Motherhood and Me. I'm Ulcerative Colitis Mama, and for those who are new to listening to my podcast, welcome. For those of you who've listened before, welcome back. I'm aware once again that it's been a couple of weeks since I last recorded any content, and that's quite normal for me. And it's mainly because sometimes I just don't have anything to really talk about. And other times it's just, you know, work and life just kind of get in the way, really. But I just want to reassure everybody that I am good, I'm okay, I'm in a good place, and I will explain all that in due course. But so just basically, for those who are new, who haven't listened to my podcast before, or have maybe sort of seen my other social media platforms, or maybe even haven't, my name is Lauren. I do tend to go by Ulcerative Colitis Mama, or UCM if I can't be bothered typing that all out. And basically, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis about 12 weeks after my first child was born, my one and only. And basically, from that came not only obviously kind of life-changing kind of diagnosis, really, as there is no known cure for it. It's an autoimmune disease. There is no kind of reason how it came about, really. I've been sort of perfectly healthy up until then. And of course, it came with a lot of other things as well. And of course, like the emotional and sort of basically the enormity of it all came crashing down on me, especially as a new mother. So a lot of my content kind of more kind of leans towards the mental health side of things, because I think was the biggest challenge, the biggest part of my journey, really, into recovery. As I would like to say, you know, I'm very proud that I've kind of come out the other side, and I'm in a really, really good place in recovery at the moment, mental health wise. I'm also 2 years in remission from the colitis, so all kind of good all around, really. Of course, I've still got the issues with the whole gynae stuff, which I'll go into shortly, because that's been quite relevant in the last sort of, well, 2 years, really. And it's kind of like the saga of that, really. So without further ado, I will continue into tonight's episode. Now, those of you who have listened to my content before will know that I tend to waffle on, and it kind of goes on anything between kind of 45 minutes and an hour and a half. Depends how much I've got to talk about. So basically, there's been a few updates since my last episode. Obviously, there was some concerns in my last episode that there was a lot of kind of brain fog going on, a lot of forgetfulness, a lot of kind of like questioning my own sanity at some point, particularly as I've been in quite a good place emotionally lately. So just a quick recap. So sort of a few weeks leading up to the previous episode, I was starting to feel like not myself. I was quite run down. I had a lot of things going on in terms of just, you know, work and, you know, the normal stresses of everyday life. But I was really kind of getting quite concerned at one point, because my brain fog was particularly bad. You know, I was getting very forgetful in work, and with me being very kind of work driven, and it kind of keeps my mental health on an even keel, really, because it keeps me busy. To kind of almost not fail, but to kind of underperform in my job, I take it very, very personally. And I take sort of any kind of criticism, if you like, I take it really to heart. So there were a couple of incidences where things were forgotten, and I had to kind of pass them on to other colleagues. And then I felt like really guilty, because I felt like, you know, I was kind of shirking my responsibilities, really, and kind of putting more work on other people, where, you know, and I wasn't sort of playing fair, kind of thing. And that's not me at all. And sometimes you kind of overcompensate for trying to guess what people are thinking, and you know, you then start this, it kind of embroils into this whole, oh, I don't want them to think that I'm this, I don't want them to think that I'm that. So you kind of go so far over the other side of that that you end up kind of making mistakes and tripping yourself up anyway. So, and that's basically what was happening. And I felt like I was spiraling a little bit. And I just couldn't figure out why. Now, obviously, I've still got this this saga ongoing with the gynae thing. So basically, very, very quick recap, which I'll go into more depth, you know, a bit later in this episode. But basically, I'm waiting for an IUD removal, which was supposed to happen 2 years ago, because for some reason it just wouldn't move and wouldn't come out. So then I got concerned that could it have been around this? Could it have been a hormonal thing? And one of the biggest concerns I had with having this IUD in that's, you know, 2 years past its expiry date, although looking at, you know, kind of research and things, that there is no kind of, you know, it that they're kind of okay for 8 years, the particular one I have. But anyway, so I was worrying that that was doing some damage somewhere, and I was kind of quite concerned about my hormonal health. In particular, I thought at one point that I'd gone into premature menopause, like early menopause, because I was sort of feeling, you know, if you look on the latest research and things, there's up to like there's over 100 different symptoms for peri and menopausal you know, symptoms. So and brain fog was one of them, and I was having, you know, sort of short temperedness, I was being fatigued, I was, you know, I was having trouble sort of waking up in the mornings. I wasn't struggling so much to fall asleep, it was just like the mornings particularly struggled with. And I normally only get like that in the winter because I'm not a winter person. You know, I like daylight. I like, you know, there being like long evenings and things. I'm very much a summer, maybe even autumn person, but definitely not winter. Anyway, so I was starting to sort of feel all these symptoms, and I was getting quite emotional with it as well. And I was freaking out, I'm not going to lie. And so I contacted my GP, and I just sort of said, look, you know, you're probably going to think I'm crazy. And especially if they look at my history on their notes, they probably think, oh, here we go again. No. So I sort of described all my symptoms, and my biological father also had leukemia. So, and kind of brain fog and things and lethargy and things like that can also be a symptom of issues with your blood, which essentially is what leukemia is, or partly. And so, it, you know, and the relief of my GP taking me seriously actually made me feel very emotional. So this GP I've never kind of really dealt with before. He's quite young, he's quite new to the practice. So basically we were on the phone for about half an hour, because, you know, most GP kind of consultations are now over the phone since COVID. And I just sort of said, look, I'm worried about this. You know, this is what's going on at the moment. I'm still waiting to be seen by gynecology, blah, 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 the rest of it. So he said, right, no, that's cool. I don't think he used the word cool, but he said that was fine. So he ordered me a full set of bloods, and it was literally an A4 page full of bloods. So I got those done and got the results. So the great thing is, I don't know if anybody else has this with GPs or whatever, when you phone up, you have to phone up past a certain time of the day, and then you generally get told by the receptionist what your blood results are, which I don't kind of agree with, because they're not, you know, medically trained. Anyway, so I rang up, I was finishing work, it was like quite like Friday afternoon, say, and I just said, look, you know, my blood results back. And she said, yep, everything's come back normal, except for one. And Dr. C would like to give you a ring to discuss it with you. So as you can imagine, somebody who has quite pent up anxiety anyway, and I was also quite concerned, you know, with regards to the symptoms I've been having. I then had to wait 6 days for said GP to call me back because that was the only time he was available. So, you know, things happen, you know, it's a big practice. It covers a very big area. So, you know, it's not that there's no fault there. It's just, unfortunately, it's just how the system is these days. And in fairness to the GP, he went through every single blood result with me over the phone and just discussed it with me. So the good news was that I didn't have any signs or symptoms of leukemia. My bone marrow, my bone profile, my blood results in that respect were fine. My full blood count was absolutely fine. He then went through, like, my liver function was fine, my kidney function was fine. I had no sort of, you know, he said basically all your organs are working. He said your fertility levels are fine. He said you were still fertile. He said something like, there is no sign of you going into menopause. All your hormonal blood levels are within normal range. Your thyroid levels are normal as well, which could account for any hormonal imbalances as well. So he said the only thing that's kind of crept up is this one, and it's your plasma viscosity. Now, as a nurse, it's not a blood result I tend to look at. And when we look at your blood result, I say we, you know, like, you know, in case you guys aren't, like, I'm pretty sure that a few of you guys out there are working the healthcare system, so you'll know. But you tend to look at the main red flag sort of things when you look at blood results. You know, you look at sort of like the hemoglobin level, your ferritin levels you'll look at. There are specific things that you look for. And generally, as a rule, you look at your hemoglobin, which could be an indicator of anemia and things like that. But there are like a few kind of like lesser known components of your blood results. And one of these is plasma viscosity. Now, I don't know an awful lot about it myself because, like I said, I only have a general broad knowledge of, you know, blood values. And basically, the GP sort of said it can be a symptom of a kind of an underlying infection somewhere. So he said, then I sort of said to him, well, what were my inflammatory markers that's known as your C-reactive protein? Is what we use in where I work. And that could be an indicator that your body's fighting an infection somewhere and it elevates. So the higher the number, the bigger the infection. And he said, well, I actually didn't request that blood, so we haven't got that to go by. But he said plasma viscosity, when it's slightly elevated, and it was literally like 0.25 elevated, said it can be kind of like an underlying, like a longer... He said like a more kind of long-term kind of underlying infection. So he said that can account for, you know, colitis probably being one of them. But he kind of never mentioned that. But he also said it could be the thing going on with, you know, obviously your overdue IUD that's still there, you know. And he said it could also be an indicator of a viral infection, which may indicate for your other symptoms. So he said, you know, it's nothing to be concerned about, but I would like to keep an eye on it. So if you organise getting some more bloods done sort of the end of the month, we can check it again for you. And that's kind of how it's lay at the moment. So my blood forms are actually still at my GP's. They were ready to pick up last Friday, but I just haven't had a chance to do it. So I'm not too concerned because... Since then, I've also had my pre-op assessment, my second pre-op assessment for my IUD removal, so which they happily took blood off me then as well. So that's happened. So I'm quite glad to hear. And it was like I felt a lot of relief knowing that, you know, the main concerns I had weren't, you know, that nothing came of them. So my health is generally okay. So then I tried not to read too much into the plasma viscosity thing, because then you start kind of going down a rabbit hole. Then you start, you know, if you have health anxiety like me, that can cause a whole world of other problems for you. So I trust the GP, and if he had any cause for concern, he would have contacted me further. So that's what's happened lately. So I'm very glad to know that I'm not going into early menopause, that I am still fertile, though, you know, that's not really a thing. But that I'm not menopausal as yet, so that's fine. And of course, that there was nothing wrong with my bone marrow or anything like that. So I haven't got any sort of hint of any big nasties going on at the moment. So that's great. So yeah, moving on. So to the pre-op. So me, Big G, Little G, and the dog had gone out. We'd gone away camping, and funnily enough, my pre-op assessment appointment came through. Now, this is my second one because I was supposed to have surgery back in March. Well, first of all, it was supposed to be February. Then it was March. Then it kind of fizzled out and I heard of nobody. And then that's when I put a grievance in. I put a complaint in. And it wasn't, you know, as an NHS worker myself and having worked for the trust that kind of covers all, you know, the area which I intend to have my surgery and the area which I actually work in, you know, I understand there's been a lot of, you know, COVID for a start, and there's been a massive backlog, and I appreciate that I don't come under the emergency kind of bracket, and I appreciate that because there's a lot of people going through a lot more nastier things in their lives than having an IUD sort of overstaying its welcome for 2 years. So appreciated that, but it was more that the delay in, like, sort of between my scan results and actually seeing a doctor and various other things. So anyway, so I actually had a clinic appointment with a consultant a few weeks ago, which was a complete waste of time for both parties. Because he didn't know why I was there and I didn't know why I was there either. So we sort of had a bit of a 10-minute discussion, bearing in mind it's an hour, just over an hour each way to get to this place, to this hospital that I go to. And I was obviously sat there waiting to be seen for about 3/4 of an hour for my appointment. So, you know, it was, it wasn't great, but in fairness to that consultant, he was very proactive. He was probably more annoyed than I was, to be honest, because, you know, he said, "You're young, you need surgery. We know what's needed." And he said, "I don't understand why this hasn't been followed up." So I believe he had some sort of part in sort of my then renewed pre-op date and surgical date coming through. So yeah, so I went for my pre-op. Actually, we'd gone camping on the Sunday and left there on the Thursday. And funnily enough, just out of some weird kind of, you know, fate or whichever, my pre-op came up on the Thursday, and we were actually camping not too far away, you know, just about 20 miles or so away from that hospital. So my pre-op was done very, very quickly. So, you know, I was quite happy for that, you know, to happen, really. It was quite handy. So I had bloods done then, so which came in handy even more so for the following week. So anyway, so this was the Thursday. On the Friday, I get a phone call from an unknown number. "Hi, it's so-and-so from gynecology. I'm very sorry your surgery has been cancelled again." Now, it was, I was speechless. I didn't really know what to say to the lady who rang me, and it wasn't her fault. But I just sort of said to her, "This is the third time my surgery has been cancelled." And she said, "Well, unfortunately, there is no anaesthetist." I've said, "Well, you know, when you're having a general anaesthetic, they're generally the most important person you need." So, yeah, I wasn't too happy. But like I said, it wasn't her fault. She was just delivering the message. So I was just very upset because I'd got myself psyched up for it. Finally, I'd got my head around, you know, it was a means to an end, and that it was the only option was to, you know, the surgical approach. And bear in mind, it's only day case surgery. It's not like I'm having, you know, anything major going on. It's just me personally with my health anxiety. It was just quite a lot to kind of psych myself up for. And I'd even gone as far as packing my hospital bag, you know, just like my slippers, pajamas, dressing gown, toiletries, you know, just in case they kept me in overnight. And then it was just, it was about 3:30 on a Friday afternoon, and I was due in for surgery at 7:30 on the Monday morning. So I wasn't best pleased. And it was even more of a pain in the neck because Big G had had to cancel some appointments for himself. And also I was going to rebook. I was supposed to be having my clinic appointment over the phone with my my IBD nurse. So I'd actually rebooked it, but then for some weird reason she actually phoned me anyway, so it was fine. But I said one benefit came of it was that she had access to my blood results, which were taken at my pre-op, so she knew that my blood results were okay. So I guess it was kind of a, you know, it came in useful. So that was nice. It was quite I was quite disarmed actually by the phone call. I wasn't expecting her to call because I'd actually text to rebook, you know, when you sometimes get automated messages through and you could put like cancel or rebook or, you know, do not reply or whatever. And I'd actually put rebook because obviously I was going to be in surgery that day. Anyway, she rang me. She was lovely. I think she was new. And just sort of, you know, it's lovely when you have to ask, you know, oh, how are your bowels and what type are they? Are they, is there any, you know, blood or mucus or, you know, the usual. And I was happy to report no and that I'd been in remission for 2 years. So she was very happy with that. So she was now sent me another appointment for August next year. So it's quite nice that they're obviously keeping an eye on me. And just sort of saying, oh, you know, we can prescribe over the phone if you do end up in a flare. You don't have to come in. And I was like, no, that's, you know, it's fine. I know what to do. It's, you know, I'm quite well rehearsed after 7 years. So, so kind of things, I guess, happen for a reason. So, so I did get a very apologetic phone call yesterday from the secretary of the surgeon that has let me down 3 times so far. And he's rebooked me in for September. So fingers crossed, as of September, I may be rid of snag. So we can only hope, eh? So health-wise, things are kind of moving. I'm not giving up much hope that, you know, my surgery may very well be cancelled again in September. So I'm just trying to keep an open mind, really. But at the minute, I'm so used to it, my current situation anyway. So I'm not kind of losing out at all. It's just frustrating, especially when you have to travel so far for, you know, for the procedure in the first place. So yeah, it's just frustration more than anything. I do apologize as well if my microphone is like really loud or really muffled or anything tonight. I can't sort of gauge the sound quality of this podcast episode, mainly because you know, the I don't know if it's my connection or whatever it is, but my headset is also really, really close to my face, which I don't really like. So anyway, moving on. So in other news as well, I don't think I actually mentioned this on my episode last time, and I don't know if it was actually round about the time anyway, but basically I applied for a new job. So it was like the best worst kept secret I've had and since I got pregnant, I suppose. But So a few weeks ago, I saw this job advertised, and it's a clinical nurse specialist role. So it would be, you know, a very, very, very good opportunity to progress career-wise and to specialise in something. And I feel that my current job, I've gone as far as I can go. And, you know, I don't think I felt contentment in my job since probably last 12 months, maybe, that I've just not, I love, don't get me wrong, I love my job and I love what I do, and I certainly love the people I work with, but I've always wanted to go a little bit further up the ladder, not necessarily to, you know, management level. That's not something I want to do, but I wanted to utilize and hone those skills that I'd learned a couple of years ago when I did my my postgraduate module. And you know, and it as awful as it sounds, it's going to sound really kind of superficial now, but I'd been in that role, it'd be six years pretty much this month that I started in my current job. And everybody else I started with, and even people that have started after me, have actually progressed and they've had promotions, or they've gone on to sort of like promotion level jobs. So, and I've kind of felt a little bit left behind, and it's always been the case. I've always been a little bit envious, I guess, but my lack of confidence has always let me down. And the timing's never been right. And certainly with having little G, you know, I was, you know, little G was just barely one when I started this job. And I wasn't in a good place. And I was very much still quite early on in my recovery. And, you know, I was a very different person then. And it's not so much that these opportunities have passed me by, it's just that, well, firstly, I've not applied for them, and it would have meant a sort of working full time, and there would have been even less of a work-life balance, and I didn't feel that my emotional strength was there, and I didn't feel like I was in a good place to be able to take on more responsibility. So I bowed out of those runnings, really. And I was really, really happy for my colleagues that did succeed and that did get those posts. But it was a case of always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of situation. And there were four of us that started initially, and two of them have been promoted twice since then. So they're sort of two rungs up the ladder than me, and one's actually three rungs up the ladder and is actually now a nurse practitioner who's, you know, very, very highly skilled and a specialist in her own right. And, you know, it just sort of, you know, not that there's anything wrong with staying at the staff level and, you know, staying on the shop floor kind of thing. It's just I always wanted to go a little bit further. And it, like I said, the timing was never right. So I don't know if I'd been watching something or reading something, and there was something very kind of touching about the taking that leap of faith. And it was just one night, I just scrolling through the jobs website, because I do that now and again, especially if I've had a bad day in work. And, you know, a lot of the time it's like, oh, no, I wouldn't do that again. I've done that. I've been there. Or it's just nothing's really jumped out at me. And this job did. And it was kind of because I'd worked with the team before, sort of alongside them, not actually for them or with them. They've just, obviously, with them being specialists, they work alongside you in the hospital, sort of thing. You call upon them for help and support. And I thought, you know, I've got nothing to lose here. So I put my application in, and I contacted, so with some of these adverts and things, they have like a, you know, if you want to arrange an informal visit, please contact such and such. And that's what I did. I emailed one of the staff there who I knew. I haven't seen, obviously I've left the hospital setting a long time ago, but there were people that I did work with quite closely when, especially when I was on sort of trauma and orthopedics. And yeah, I dropped them an email and I said, would you mind if I came and had a look around and had a chat? And they were like, yeah, great, no problem. So I went, and it was the day, the closing day. So I thought, you know what, I'll do a gamble. I'll do the application, which takes ages, but I'll do it anyway. And if it's really something I don't want, I can always withdraw from it. It's not, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So I went and met this nurse specialist and had a good chat, and it just seemed to really appeal to me. And I just remember being there, and I'm in my own clothes. So obviously it was just like an informal meeting. So I went there in my own clothes, hoping not to bump into anybody I knew. And of course I worked at that hospital for many, many years before I came out into the community. So of course I bumped into everybody, didn't I? But thankfully nobody I currently worked with, until I was leaving the hospital and I bumped into one of my senior colleagues, who I have absolute massive respect for, and who I regard as like my work mum. And I was just like, oh no, I feel like I've been caught doing something naughty. So I told her, I just sort of said, look, I've just been for a look round and haven't made any decisions yet, but I kind of had. And that was it. You know, the meeting went really, really well. So anyway, I didn't hear anything, and everything's done sort of via email these days, and it's all done like on like a third party website kind of thing. And I was actually away on holiday with the family, and then I got an email to say I'd been shortlisted and invited to attend an interview. And then I was like, oh my God, it was like, this is crazy. And you know, because I didn't really expect to be shortlisted, because a lot of the jobs that I'd applied for before had looked for people already in a promoted kind of level, and I wasn't. And my concern was, had I made myself too comfortable in my current job, that's kind of stagnated my practice, really. Which, you know, kind of meant like you're kind of stuck in a bit of a limbo, because you haven't quite got working up to that level that some employers want. So, and that's kind of where I'd settled myself at, that, you know, oh well, you know, can have a look again. But I just felt very, when I've not been shortlisted before, I've not really been too upset, but I was really quite, I really, really wanted this job, probably more than I let myself know to begin with. And anyway, so yeah, I got called up for interview, and I thought, I'm going to have to now tell people at work that I have been called for interview, because it was, like I said, it was the best and worst kept secret I've had. And I'd sort of mentioned it to a couple of people. I think usually when I've been a bit annoyed and, oh, well, I've applied for another job, you know, at the heat of the moment. But then what they said soon, you know, things can't be unsaid once you say them. So, yeah, I was sort of kicking myself after that. But anyway, so then, yeah, I had to have that conversation with my manager and just sort of say, look, you know, I have actually been called up for an interview. And I explained, you know, it's for career progression, it's for, you know, work-life balance as well, because even though I'd be increasing my hours to full time, they're actually like nicer hours, which means no weekends, no bank holidays, no evenings. So it would be literally, I can keep my work in work and my home life at home, you know, I can have that boundary. And I didn't imagine I'd get shortlisted anyway. But anyway, so my interview was yesterday. and I was absolutely bricking it. And bearing in mind, I've not attended a job interview for nearly 6 years. And even then, I was absolutely terrified. So with any job, I guess, is the higher up the ladder you go, the more intense the interviews are. And this was my first interview for what we call a band six. So it's like your junior sister level. And normally, like, you know, the average kind of interview is about 5 questions, and they just, you know, sort of, you know, general sort of things, then a scenario, and then a, you know, just a piece on just to how you would deal with a certain situation. And I had 9 questions. 9. And they were all really quite complex questions. They were like really putting me on the spot. And I was so glad I did last minute revision yesterday morning. And as you can imagine, I'm quite good at talking. So despite my nerves, I sort of answered everything that I felt I could answer and drew upon my own experiences and the skill set that I could bring to the role and things. And I just sort of, as my mum would say, well, sit there and smile, look like you want to be there, carry on talking, and you might sort of answer a question if you don't quite get it right. And I left there absolutely boiling. I've never sweated so much in my life. And I sort of walked from there, and I actually felt relieved that I'd got it over and done with, but I was sort of kind of feeling quite, I was internalizing a lot of it as I, you know, mulled it over while I was walking back to my car. And I thought, oh, I don't think that went very well. Oh well, it, you know, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be, and yada yada yada. Anyway, so I drove back. I then had work, so I drove to my workplace, and then I thought, right, well, you know, sort of had a quick chit chat with my colleagues and sort of said, oh, well, it was all right. It was a bit of a tough interview. I felt, you know, quite put on the spot, and it was quite intense, and there were a lot of quite difficult questions. And anyway, I was like, right, I better go and get changed into my uniform, because obviously I was wearing a suit. And then I go into our, like, we've got like a big bathroom just next door to our office. And just as I'd like sort of taken my shoes off and stuff, somebody comes banging on the door, your phone's ringing, it says no caller ID. And I was like, oh my god. So I run through to the office, grab my phone, and head back out the room again. And so it was the matron, so the lead for the team. And she sort of started by, oh, I want to thank you very much for coming today. We really appreciate you taking your time to interview. And I was like, oh, here we go. But, you know, unfortunately, I was waiting for that. And said, we would just like to offer you the post. And I was just like, sorry? So we'd like to offer you the post. And I actually said, and I will probably, this will probably haunt me for the rest of my life, but I went, oh my God, really? And she's like, yes, we'd like to offer you the post. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. I don't know what to say. I said, I'm so sorry. I was very nervous during my interview. And the matron was like, no, well, that didn't come across. You interviewed very, very well. I was like, are you sure? Then I started thinking, maybe they phoned the wrong person. Maybe they've got the wrong application form out or something. Anyway, so I got the job, which I'm still can't get my head around. So I phoned Big G. He was in work, so he was very happy for me. Phoned my mum, obviously, and told my colleagues. There were hugs all around, but it was quite bittersweet, really, because I'm so happy that somebody feels that they can take me on. I know that sounds kind of corny and a bit kind of self-deprecating, but that somebody thinks, yeah, we need this girl here working with us, we can mold her, shape her, we can get her to our standard, we can teach this girl, you know, to be our future, kind of. Because the two nurses that are already in post have already done what they call like their retire and return. So they're already they've sort of semi-retired, shall we say. And so they're obviously not going to be around for, you know, they're going to look at taking their full retirement in the next few years. So they needed like a legacy. And I'm it. So I'm still kind of getting my head around the whole thing. It's one hell of a shock. And I'm really, really proud of myself. And it just kind of, after so many years of sort of everything I've been through in the last few years, and from the person I was when I first started in my old job, where I was very much a very, very broken soul, to now, I just feel like it's my time now. It's my time to kind of to shine now. I'm the bride now, you know, and I'm just so, so happy. But I'm also really sad, because it means, you know, 6 years, it's been like pretty much half my career in the job I've been in. And I've just grown with the job, you know, the service has changed so much. It's got so much bigger, and it's so much more, you know, intricate now than it was when I first started. It's so much more challenging than it was when I first started. And they're my family. And that's going to be hard. Oh, I don't think I get emotional talking about it, but that's going to be the hardest thing, is leaving them. Because I don't really know any different now, because it's been so long. Even in my old job, and I loved my old job prior to the one I'm in now, and that was hard to leave, and I'd been there 3 years. But you're very much a number, I don't mean that like in a nasty way. I just think, well, no, because somebody else would have filled my job a few weeks later. And it would be like, oh, well, Lauren's not here now, but, you know, oh, we got the new girl now, sort of thing. And that's just life, and that's how it goes on. But, you know, 6 years is a long time, and a lot has changed then, you know. And they've been through it, you know, most of them have been through my recovery with me and are still there, and they still talk to me, and they still like me, and they still want to work with me, you know. So they've seen me at my worst, you know, they've seen me at rock bottom, and that's more than just colleagues that pick you back up off the ground again. They're absolutely amazing women. And men, I should say, the one man that works with me. You know, so that's going to be exceptionally difficult when I get, you know, when I leave. I mean, it may take a while, because obviously, you know, things, you know, the recruitment kind of, what's the word, the process, if you like, can be quite lengthy at times, because of the transition to different departments, and, you know, you have to go again through this third party that you have to have all your paperwork done, and you have to have a health assessment, and you know, you have to make sure your records are up to date and your training and bloody blah. So there's a lot of stuff that needs to be signed off first. But then as well, it's making sure then I have to put my 4 weeks notice in from then. So it is going to be probably October by the time I do go. And there is a sense of relief, because I'm not going to have the same stresses. And I'm not going to have the same responsibilities I have now. I'm going to have different responsibilities. But it's change, and as much as I probably kind of may have said that I'm very adaptable to change, which in theory I am, but emotionally I'm not always, and this is going to be probably my biggest challenge. In spite of that, you know, everything that's happened in the last sort of 6 years, sort of closing that chapter is going to be hard. And obviously I'm going to still be in touch with them. We're still going to go out together and we're still going to, you know, meet up and have play dates with the kids and stuff. I don't want that to stop. I don't want that to end. And I really hope it doesn't. But that's going to be hard. That's going to be really, really hard. And, you know, the little Christmas buffets and the coronation buffets and the, you know, the, what else have we had? You know, the royal wedding and, you know, or one of them, one of the royal wedding, you know, we've had weddings, we've had babies born, we've had loss, we've had grief, we've gone through so much. People have come to us, you know, their marriages have ended, or they've had horrific heartbreak, or they've had, you know, we've all been through the mill, that team. We have, and we kind of, you know, we've all come together, you know, and we've supported each other, and I hope that never stops. Even when, you know, we no longer work together, it's going to be tough, and I feel quite emotional thinking about it, but I know this is the right time for me to go, because I need to do something for me now. I'm good now. I'm in a good place and I'm healthy-ish. It's a good change. It's a positive change. It's not a punishment. It's very much that this could be the making of my career. This could be, you know, and it opens so many more doors for me. And I'm looking forward to it in that sense. It's just change. Change is hard sometimes, isn't it? But you know, we adapt. We're adaptable beings as humans, and we do move with the times, and you know, and that's inevitable, really. So I'm trying to pour myself into looking forward to it, and all the things I could learn off these two nurses, because they are incredible nurses. And they know everything. And I can't wait to learn from them and kind of be their little protege, which I'm hoping that'll happen. And plus, like a few of my colleagues that have moved on and have moved back to the hospital as well, I'll get to see them. So it's kind of, you know, already making lunch dates happen. You know, we're going to meet up for lunch and coffee and stuff when time allows, you know, and we'll be covering the same departments. So it's kind of, you know, it'll be okay, it'll be good. And you know, you make the most of it. Life's what you make it, as the song goes. And it'll be good. So it is, there's a couple of my colleagues don't actually know yet, so I'm sure they'll get told before I have a chance to tell them, but that's okay. That's fine. You know, it's they deserve to know at the end of the day. It's just going to be really difficult, but I'm going to make the most of these last few weeks that I'm with them, and, you know, and hopefully do organize something nice for them. And maybe, who knows, we'll have a leaving party out of it as well. So, you know, it's onwards and upwards, and it's, you know, and when I went and had this sort of informal meeting with one of the nurses, and she sort of said to me, you know, no, we need somebody young like you. And I thought, oh, that's quite nice being considered young. That's, you know, that's very flattering. You know, and she sort of said, look, you know, me and the other nurse, we've done our bit now, and we want to slow down now. We need to leave it to somebody like, you know, somebody like you that can take it over. It's your time now, you know, and, you know, little G's a bit older now, and he can understand. And you know, it is going to be, you know, Monday to Friday job. It's a job that I can hopefully leave there and not bring it home with me, and not bring that level of stress home anymore. I'm not going to say it's probably going to be a stressful job. It's going to be quite a lot of running around and learning a lot of new things about different things, and but there'll be opportunity for me to be able to teach and things like that. And I just think that's just, it's just right up my street, and, you know, and adapting and making the role my own. So yeah, big changes on the horizon. So we shall see. And hopefully I get my surgery done as well. So that'll be good. And I've also booked my first tattoo in 8 years as well. So it's all happening, you know. So I've arranged to have a basically it's just a modification of one I've already got. But like, so, you know, maybe I will share that with you, what you guys on Insta, who knows, we shall see. But yeah, everything's happening, and it's all kind of happening all at the same time. So a lot of change, a lot of stuff happening in quite quick succession, really. And I'm still kind of reeling from it, to be honest, that they gave me the job. I obviously hid my weirdness quite well now. In all seriousness, though, it's I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm excited, I'm nervous, I'm a bit of everything, really. And you know, it's a new start, it's a new change, I can only hope it'll be very positive. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to be learning from some of the best nurses I've ever had the pleasure to work with. And, you know, that it's too good an opportunity to miss, and to not take that leap of faith and make that move, because I don't think I'd ever have this opportunity again, and certainly not for the area that I'm hoping to, well, that I will be working for. So I will keep you guys updated, and I'll keep, you know, and obviously when I do start my new post, that, you know, I will kind of sort of fill you in on what's happening. All I can say is, again, for those who are new to this podcast and that have enjoyed my very lengthy episodes, thank you so much. I'm really, really flattered, and I'm really, and like I said, you're very welcome here. If you don't mind my dulcet tones prattling on about absolute garbage. And also for those of you who have continued to listen and support my social media platforms and my podcast, thank you a million. I'm truly touched, and I'm incredibly amazed that this podcast has actually had so much interest. So I, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much, and thank you for being on this journey with me as well. And as always, as I say at the end of all my episodes, just look after yourself, keep talking. Let's break down those barriers, you know, those stigmas around our mental well-being, and look after each other, and be kind, always be kind, and stay safe, and good night.